Hey, this is Adam Richman from Food Network UK, and you are feasting your ears on the Hotspur Podcast. Come on, you Spurs.
Yeah, well, welcome to a brand new Hotspurs podcast. It is Monday, the 5th of April, 2021. I am Steve in Leon St. Essex, and today on my Spurs journey, we have got Mr. Kieran Knight. How are you doing, Kieran?
I'm good, thank you, Steve. Thanks for having me on.
Now, people are going, yeah, I know Kieran. famous podcaster from all through down the years. I recognise that voice. Didn't he sing a little ditty do 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 at one point? The original and the best Spursy pod, might I say. Someone else took it over and abruptly stopped it last year. But let's talk about your podcasting career then, Kieran, so everybody knows and everyone can go, oh yeah, I know him.
I think, Steve, you've done a good job of fluffing it up a bit there. The Spursy podcast was a podcast myself and Ben Alfrey, Inside N17 on Twitter, used to do about 6 or 7 years ago. And as the name would suggest, and I know there was a podcast more recently under the same name, it wasn't Spursy, obviously, is a tag assigned with sort of negative memories and whatnot. It was a general Spurs podcast like that there's many of nowadays. We used to just speak about the last game, the next. It was good fun. Times are obviously very different. We mentioned on my last podcast on the new edition, which we'll come on to with Ben, and how things have changed so much over the last 6 years. But yeah, it was something I enjoyed at the time. Ben was just starting a new business 7 or so years ago. I was just starting out my working career. So time sort of dwindled out, and we ended up, it fizzled out, and we stopped doing it for a long period. And then lockdown come around last March. And obviously, as everyone knows, we all had a bit more spare time. And we all enjoy talking about Tottenham and football. So I wanted to bring something back. And I was thinking for a while how I could do that with a slightly different spin. I think it could have been easy to just get a sort of a standard Spurs podcast to talk about the last game, the next, Harry Kane, Jose Mourinho, all these things. And I would have enjoyed doing that. But I thought that if we were going to bring something back and just offer another Spurs podcast, we'd try and have a different spin. So I tried to bring it back and to think what I enjoyed chatting about football the most, because essentially I'm doing it as a hobby. I want to enjoy what I'm talking about, and the guests that I have on, I want them to as well. So what I ended up on was trying to think of a podcast that really just spoke about the good times. I know in the current moment there hasn't been many of them, but going back, obviously I'm only 26, so in my lifetime my good moments are very different to, say, when I chat to my dad. My good moments are like funny days out with my mates and whatnot, and memorable last minute goals. Whereas when you take it back to different areas, it's trophies and titles. So that was essentially the idea of it. It's a podcast where we look back on better times from sort of the angle of a fan. So a lot of the episodes we talk about are more sort of around the trips of the games. We just done an episode on Prague, which people listen to and say, like, oh, why would I want to listen to an episode on Spurs playing Slavia Prague in the UEFA Cup? But it's more about sort of the fans.
You don't have to listen to it. That's the thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's more
sort of, if you want to have a laugh, if you don't want to have a laugh, you just want to be miserable, don't listen to it.
Yeah, that's the idea.
That's how I'll respond to that.
It's just, I think the idea of it really come about of Spurs obviously get hit all the time with not winning anything, and sort of, oh, it must be so miserable being a Spurs fan. And it sort of has a defensive mechanism. I thought, no, that's wrong. Like, if your view on football is about that, then as fans, that can't be how we have to view it. Maybe we're saying that because we don't win trophies, and if we did, it'd be different. But that's the idea of it. We wanted to bring something that was quite sort of lighthearted. Just, and obviously it's a rubbish time at the moment in life in general. So we wanted to bring something a little lighthearted out there that sort of just brought back some good time supporting Spurs.
I mean, I've always thought that, I was talking to Abby Summers about this, about the fact that as Spurs fans, we have so little to celebrate in terms of trophies. But in a way, you know, it's a good thing, because if you look at, we play Newcastle this weekend, right? And it was 2-2. And you think to yourself, well, Newcastle haven't won anything for, what is it, 50 years, 60 years? However, they've had great moments over the last 10 years, because they've been relegated 5 times, you know, so they've been promoted 5 times. So they've had that, you know, West Ham as well, the joy of being promoted. Wonderful, great times. Everton, the joy of relegation battles and staying up. Fantastic. Aston Villa, again, a club that's won nothing. But you know, can celebrate that getting back in the Premier League. For Spurs, unfortunately, we're either mid-table or top six or top four in the last few years. We haven't been relegated, so we haven't had those amazing moments of being promoted like those other clubs have. You know, but obviously that's a great thing, that we've never been relegated, so we don't have to deal with that. As I said to you know, Hasper, who was a brilliant guest, and if you go back and have a listen to it, it's a really good debate we have about, you know, what is success and trophies and everything else. And you know, you, when you say winning trophies, the top five or six teams have won lots of trophies. But then after that, you've got anomalies. Leicester with the league, Swansea, I think, won a cup. Wigan obviously won the FA Cup. We're the only team that's won three in the last 25 years. Everton have won one. West Ham won nothing. Villa won nothing. Blah, 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 blah. We have actually won three in the last 30. You have to go back 30 years. And if we win another one, that's four. But other teams don't win anything. So what when it says, oh, you have to win a trophy, you know, I sent a tweet out about Rice needs to leave West Ham to win trophies. Obviously a joke about all this Harry Kane needs to leave. But the number of West Ham fans saying, oh, you're a tin pot club, you win nothing. This is West Ham fans having a go at Spurs fan for about not winning trophies. What? It's crazy, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong, like, Spurs absolutely need to be winning that three, you mentioned three trophies in the last 30 years. For a club like Spurs, that's terrible, and we absolutely do need. And that's not what I'm not saying. The idea, and when I like to sort of harp on about sort of what being a fan, in my opinion, should be about, and that doesn't for a second mean that I don't think trophies are important. Of course, it's the be and all end all in a sense of supporting your football club. It's what you want. You want to see your club compete at that level. But my point is that it's just so simplistic to say that that's what following a fan is all about, because as you've just all those examples, moments and glory comes in so many different forms. Like last season when Aston Villa survived on the last couple of weeks of the season, like for them, that moment in them, that was glory. So to take that, you think, what, how many clubs in England win a trophy each year? Like four or five, maybe, you know, a few if other clubs win the domestic cups. But so all those other clubs that have had all their wonderful moments along the way, if you say, oh no, sorry, you didn't win a trophy, so just better luck next year. As a fan, that's miserable, really, right? And if that was the case, we'd all be supporting the same few clubs.
I think the beauty of your podcast is that you do talk about the moments. I mean, my favorite time as a Spurs fan, without a shadow of a doubt, was my dad hugging the person next to him when Gazza scored the free kick way before you were born at Wembley, and celebrating that Wembley FA Cup. Greatest moment in my Spurs life. Second to that was Chelsea and the semi-final against Arsenal. Third was Leicester, right? So that's three moments. But I've got to tell you, sitting in the lounge at Southend Airport, not the executive lounge, that makes me sound like I went first class. No, sitting in the you know, in the terminal, 11 o'clock on Friday morning, burger and chips, beer in my hand, waiting to go to Madrid. I you know, watching all the Spurs fans and Liverpool fans as well walking through the airport. Just everyone was so happy and so excited, and honestly, it was the most wonderful experience, and the month that led up to that, you know, and then you got the final, and which was dreadful. But that weekend, sorry, you can't you can't take that away from me. It was just brilliant. And from your podcast, you know, you talk about your trips to Prague and things. The brilliant, we had such great times. You can't just go, oh, you can't talk about that because we lost the game. You're like, no, I had a great time.
Well, we just done the Madrid episode, was the latest episode that we done on the podcast. And I'd put it off for so long, and it's my way, and as many will probably agree, it's my way of dealing with that game is I've literally, since the full-time whistle went, I've just ignored it that it ever happened. I haven't accepted that it happened. And thinking of ideas and famous games that we could talk about, I was chatting to my brother who featured on the episode, who was obviously out there with me, and we said, like, no, this is wrong. Obviously, it hurt for a long time after, and it still does, but there's a monumental occasion for Spurs being a Champions League final. Yes, we didn't win, but if you think about all those, and we'll talk about, I'm sure, that the games leading up to the final, but that trip, how we all felt. You said you was lucky enough to actually be in an airport. We drove 1,000 miles. We were one of the unlucky few. But just because we lost that game, we should look back on that thousand mile trip
to get there must have been brilliant.
It was incredible. Yeah, the way there was. not sure about the way back, but that's the whole idea. And I'm glad if people listen to it, hopefully we tried to put a positive spin on it. And we're not get the tag of like a snowflake fan. We've lost a Champions League final when you're trying to put a positive spin. No, that's not the point. The point is that we lost the game in 90 minutes. Yes, and it was devastating, but we still need to appreciate all the moments that we were lucky enough to experience leading up to it and in the days prior, because they were special. And like you say, Steve, we'll always remember them, and there'll be stories that we tell our kids. Just hopefully we'll be following up with a story of when we did win it a few years later.
Well, again, you know, like I equate ourselves certainly over the past, 20, 30 years with the Evertons of this world, West Ham, who we've had the same size stadium for 100 years. They actually moved into their massive stadium before we did. Aston Villa, Nottingham Forest, Leeds, Sheffield Wednesday growing up were massive. None of them have done anything. And I just think to myself, look, you know, if Everton, let's say Everton actually do go on a run and get fourth this year, and then then carry that on, right, and then get fourth and third and second and over the next 5 years like we have, and then they get to a Champions League final, will you turn on Talk Sport and Adrian Durham goes, oh yeah, Everton lost the Champions League final, what a bunch of bottlers? Or will people say, actually, look where Everton were. They were mid-table for years and years and years, didn't win anything. And then all of a sudden, within 3 or 4 years, they're in the Champions League final, which is what we did. But we're ridiculed for it. And it's like, they took the mickey out of us for years for being rubbish in the 90s. But it wasn't this like intense, you're a bunch of bottlers, intense ridicule that we get now. I don't know, you're a lot younger than me, but I never felt ridiculed particularly in the 90s. It was like, yeah, didn't play well, you know, you move on. This is like, ha, 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 you lost another semi-final, ha, ha. I was like, I remember when our season was over in January, year after year after year. Getting to a semi-final was actually good. But listen, mate, let's we could bang on about all this forever. Let's get into the questions. Newcastle yesterday, obviously, what can you say? Rinse, repeat. Anything you want to say about yesterday's game?
Same old, I guess, as you said. It's incredibly frustrating. It seems whenever Spurs get the opportunity to take advantage of somebody else's downfall, as was the case with Chelsea's result, we don't take it, as we've seen numerous times. But it's incredibly frustrating. I think just when you think, obviously, the Arsenal result last month was absolutely dreadful, and then the Europa League game. But then our league form, other than that, have been okay. It's been okay. It's been really good, in fact. And you think, look, we haven't certainly not turned a corner, but you think, look, this has been rubbish, but we're still in a shot of a good end of the season to finish in the top four, which we don't deserve at all with the way we've been playing, but we're somehow up there with the opportunity to do it. And you just see a result like that yesterday and a performance like that, probably more importantly, that you just think, look, we're so far away from where we need to be. And whatever your opinion is of Mourinho and whatnot, probably why I do the podcast I do is that as I've grown older, and I know that sounds silly, I'm only 26, but I don't care less about Spurs, but I've just realised that you don't achieve much from sort of being on Twitter for hours on end trying to sort of dissect the performances and games and whatnot. So I try not to get too much into that side of things. But yeah, it seems like the inevitable is going to happen, whether or not that's during the season or at the end. But and not being in the stadium, I've not written off the season, but I've accepted that it's not going to be great and we're going to end up sort of sixth or seventh or wherever it is, and we'll have a refresh in the summer, we'll be back in the stadiums and hopefully have a new exciting manager next year and things can be different. So that's where I'm at with it. It's all just a little bit numb, I think, at the moment.
We'll see. We got West Ham playing tonight, Everton playing tonight. If they both win, then they go above us. So, you know, I'm seeing all over Twitter the Jose mega supporters who I am. I was at the start and, you know, I want to see him do well. But they're saying, look, we're fifth with a cup final. Well, let's see where we are, you know, in 3 months, 3 weeks at a time. You know, if we win the cup final, wonderful. All is forgiven, in my opinion. And if we get in the top four, fantastic, you know. But Everton win tonight, West Ham win tonight, we're down to seventh. It's not looking great. And you know, last word on Spurs, do a brilliant segment now where they interview or they have people on from the opposing club. And I remember the Brighton game before we played them, we said we've got no chance. We play, you know, the manager's all over the place. We don't know what side he's picking. It's an easy 3 points for Spurs. And it was, as we remember, absolutely dreadful. Same with Newcastle. The fans they had on from their Newcastle podcast saying, absolutely no chance. We are awful. We want Bruce out. It's the worst we've ever seen Newcastle play. A guaranteed 3 points for Spurs. Nothing to worry about. And then you watch the game and you go, the stat came up halfway through the second half, 15 chances for Newcastle, 4 for Spurs. I thought, what on earth is going on? Bringing, you know, hooking off Vinicius after, okay, you know, he didn't do much in the first half, but, you know, Kane scores 2 goals. Why? Possibly because Vinicius is on the pitch, taking defenders away, things that you don't see going on. But to hook him at half-time, just to say, oh, you know, we put Son on, who, you know, was pretty useless in the second half. You know, we could go bang on about yesterday's game, but like you say, you know, what's the point? Rinse, repeat, listen to previous podcasts.
I think that's just, again, without going off on too much of a tangent on the game, but that's the frustrating thing for me is, and I know our players, clearly, bar sort of 3 or 4, aren't good enough. I get that. So it isn't all on Mourinho, but what for me stands out the most, you mentioned Brighton, Newcastle, and there's probably a million others that I can't think of top of my head, but there's been so many occasions this season where we've made poor teams, essentially. Newcastle are a poor team. You've seen their results this season. We've made them look good, and that isn't a coincidence. Of course, teams will up their game against Spurs because we're a big club. That happens. But when it's happening sort of 6-7 times a season, it has to be. It can't be a coincidence. I feel we're just setting up all wrong. And it's incredibly frustrating when you see the attacking players that we've got and our defence aren't good enough. We know that. So why build our play with a foundation on being a strong defensive unit? Because they clearly can't do it. But yeah, we could ramble on that game and our season for a long while. So I'll spare you of that.
Let's get into the fun questions. What's the first... please. Football match you remember seeing?
Ooh. This is always a question that any sort of football fan gets asked, and I'm always amazed how people can remember their first game. Maybe it's a lie because I don't know how. I don't know, maybe I just started earlier than others, but so I've got 3 brothers and we used to go, or we still do go to Spurs with my dad. So we've still got 4 season tickets. He took each one of us when we were 4 to our first game. So I'd be lying if I said I could remember my first game when I was 4. So that would have been the 98 season. And since then, I was at every season.
Let me tell you what would have happened. 98, we would have got beat. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, that's the thing. I joke. My most overwhelming, when I look back at that time, was mainly sitting on my dad's knee eating bags of Smarties each week in the Paxton. But I do remember thinking, and this is funny, like as a 5, 6, 7 year old, I remember thinking at the time, and obviously Spurs were pretty crap throughout that period, but I remember thinking, like, seeing misses. Like, I remember one miss that stands out is Raziak that or Bon Jovi, it's one of the two, that is to sitter. And I remember as like a 6 or 7 year old thinking, cool, that was rubbish. But I think the first game, when I look back, I think the first game I properly remember is the 2002 Worthington Cup games. Ooh. The first one, the semi-final against Chelsea, where we pumped them. I was too young. My mum wouldn't let me go. It was a midweek game, so they allowed me to stay up and watch it. I remember watching it on a tiny little TV in my mum and dad's bedroom, and just being like, not really probably realizing what had happened and sort of how big of a result it was, but I remember being absolutely buzzing with it. And then the final, we drove to Cardiff. I don't remember anything about the game. I remember my dad being on my dad's sort of shoulders crying after, and again, I don't know, the tears, I'm not sure what they meant, because I'm not sure I would have really appreciated what it was like. I think they probably spoke about how big it was being in a cup final and what it meant, so the emotions probably just overwhelmed me afterwards. But I think that's the first game I properly remember, being at that Millennium Stadium for the 2002 loss to Blackburn, which I think any Spurs fan starting their life in that period are only probably going to have negative memories. But fortunately for me,
Your dad sounds great taking you lot to Spurs. I might have met him, you know, in a random pub somewhere or whatever. Please tell me his name's Michael.
Mark. Close.
You know who Michael Knight is, right?
I don't, and is that going to probably show my age?
Michael Knight, Knight Rider. David Hasselhoff.
Okay, yeah, a bit before my time. I get that a lot. I get the night. That's often a nickname I try to get. People try to tag on when I first meet them. But no, I'm afraid I don't. That is probably showing my age.
Go back and watch Knight Rider. Fantastic. Right. Is there a football match that's made you cry?
I don't think so. I think it's always been my way of coping
tears
with
of,
sad
tears button. Of joy also
yeah,
accepted
that, I think, and I'm assuming there'll probably be a more suitable question later on to talk about the Ajax game, so I won't talk about it too much now, but that's the first time I've actually seen grown men cry and women cry in stadiums for happy reasons. I don't think I've ever cried bar sort of the early days in that Worthington Cup final, where I know I definitely cried. But I think, as I said with the Madrid games, my way of dealing with bad Spurs results has always been just to refuse to accept they ever happened. Like, even now when Spurs lose, like, I haven't been on Twitter today, I won't sort of read any newspapers, so I guess I'm just more of an emotionless human. So I've never allowed myself to be. I think I've always, look, there's been so many glorious moments where I've been almost close to tears in happiness, and probably more so of sadness with some of the results we had. But truthfully, I'm not sure there's ever been a game where I have cried, and that probably says more about me than...
Have you ever watched Escape to Victory?
Yes, yeah.
You not cry when Pelé scored that overhead kick?
We're talking about just crying in general life moments. We could talk about a few of those. It's certainly not been any that I can remember of watching Spurs.
What about a funny moment? Can you think of a funny moment or a funny football match?
Oh, that's a tricky one. I mean, there's been loads of individual tiny moments when you're in away ends or in the grounds where you think, where you obviously something happens and the concourse just all laughs at the same time. One that stands out, I guess, obviously we've touched on West Ham, the rivalry there with Spurs and West Ham. It is more, Spurs have always been a better and bigger club than West Ham, and they absolutely hate that of a passion. And living in Essex most of my life, that rivalry is probably more intense than anyone really with Spurs, just because of the sheer number of West Ham fans that have grown up with. But
I'm Essex, so it's West Ham fans everywhere.
So that, I think the funny, like, it always, like, when we beat Chelsea or Arsenal or something like that, I would never have said it's funny. But like games where West Ham have been in it and we've come from behind, I would class like those types of games as funny because of the belief they would have had in that moment and just knowing how big it meant to them. So the one that stands out was the Stoltari goal, which not many goals go in and you almost laugh. And again, the immediate reaction afterwards certainly wasn't laughter. It was just pure jubilation. But when it settles down, you think what it meant. At the time, they thought that it was the result that was going to send them down. Obviously, we know what happened in the last game of the season. But that was, even Martin Tyler, the commentator, when it goes in, he's almost like, oh, no, it's happened.
Oh, no, they do. Well, it's very clear. They go, oh, no. And Andy Gray goes, oh, no, no. And they don't, like, they don't then stop. They carry on. They carry on going, oh, no, oh, no. Yeah, oh, no. Oh, that's... most biased.
Like, you think they had a corner or a free kick, we clear it. obviously Defoe breaks, and we all know what happens. And that was a very funny moment, given what it meant at the time. Been a few others at West Ham. I remember being up
that commentary, Kieran. The fact that that commentary exists, I think, makes that even funnier.
Yeah, absolutely. a few others. I remember being at Upton Park once when Colton Cole put Jermaine Defoe through one on one.
Great.
And again, given that the hatred they have towards Defoe, that was pretty funny. So many moments. I always enjoy. I go to quite a number of away games, and one of my favourite things when you're getting sort of stick from the home fans, either at you as an away end or individual players, and then they end up scoring. That's always a quality moment. It's one of the best things that happens in football. So yeah, funny. There's probably loads, and I know the idea of this isn't that I haven't prepped. I didn't know what the questions were, so I'm sure there'd be plenty that I could think of. But yeah, that's the main one that comes out straight away.
When people say they haven't prepped, that's good then, because I tell them not to prep. Don't listen. And they say, well, I wasn't going to listen anyway. But you know, whatever. One of the funny, actually, I just come to mind. We played Leeds once. And you remember the chant, shall we sing a song for you? And I think they were beating us or whatever. And they started chanting, shall we sing a song for you? And then, about 30 seconds later, one of the Leeds fans goes, Tottenham, and the whole Leeds fans all went like Tottenham. So they actually sang a song for us, and I thought that was great. That really made me laugh. Right, okay, next question is there a worst football match you can remember? What is the worst football match you can ever remember?
As in worst, as in the worst quality, or worst as in like what
springs to mind? When someone says to you, what is the worst football match you ever saw? I went to the World Cup final in 1990. We had tickets on the coffee table. England were there. We lost on penalties. Chrissy Waddle, my hero. Gazza's tears. But we went to the game, and it was the worst football match I've ever seen. It was dreadful. So that's mine.
I think that's a lot more exotic. I was just allowing myself to think of a minute when you were talking then. I think yours is certainly a lot more exotic than mine. I remember a game in probably 2016, 2017, away at Sunderland. It was a half 12 kickoff. And anybody that's ever gone to Newcastle or Sunderland knows how much of a trek it is, especially from the deep, darkest pits of Essex. half 12, so it would have been a very early start. And it was a very, very, very bad 0-0. And then having to commute back. That's one that stands out. I'm sure there's been plenty.
When was that?
2016, 2017, I think it would have been.
Under Poch?
Yeah, it would have been.
I think Sunderland. Yeah. There was a Burnley where Paulinho had a shot and it went like just a straightforward shot and it went literally 30 yards wide and it was like what was that? That was a dreadful game.
We actually had another, because we joke that we'd never go to Sunderland again because of the performances we've had there. And I think I'm actually. We did definitely draw 0-0. I think it was the season we were pushing for the title. But there was one in like 2011, 2010, 20, maybe under AVB. I think that was also a 0-0. And that may be the one I'm thinking of, the half 12. But there's definitely been a few 0-0s. And I think it scarred us from ever going back to Sunderland. And I don't think it needs much to do that.
There's been a few. Have you ever been at a football match and it scared you?
I think we're all supporting Spurs. We have that most weeks, right?
That's exactly right. That's exactly the right answer.
Scared in different senses, I guess. I don't know if you're talking scary as in like from a fan's point of view.
I mean, you go to away games. So has there been moments where you and your dad and your brother or whatever, you're walking along and I don't know, 12 Everton fans are coming in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
Something like that. Or even in the stadium.
Yeah.
Like, Christ, we've got to get out of here.
Yeah, I think we done an 80s episode of my dad, and we spoke about what it was like growing up for him and sort of in the 80s, obviously a very different time. And back then you could almost you could almost walk around the corner and enter trouble. Whereas now I think you do have to go out your way a bit to get in trouble. Obviously it still happens, but one game I remember which sort of rolled back the years, not so much for me, but for Dad when talking about it, we went up to Leeds in the FA Cup on a Wednesday night, I think it was. It absolutely hounded down with snow all the way up. It was an absolute freezing night. Get in the stadium, we won, I think 4-1 or so maybe. I remember Defoe scoring. And then after the game, they keep you in. I don't think they do it so much nowadays, but they used to keep the away fans in, which was just an absolute nonsense idea because all it does is just make you a massive target when you finally leave the ground. And we all got about 45 minutes or so the streets are empty, and then suddenly 3,000, 4,000 Spurs fans just appear, and anyone that wants some trouble, obviously it doesn't take them long to find it. And we're walking down the road, and we was all walking, say, north, and there was one lad sort of walking back towards us, and all he was doing was just telling everyone, he was like, keep walking, lads, you're walking into them. And I remember him just, and I was only, I can't remember what year it was, but I would have been sort of 15, 16 or so. And I remember thinking, like, oh God, like, this isn't good. And you can see right at the top in a McDonald's they were, there was probably like 500 or so Leeds fans just waiting for us. Luckily it didn't end up being anything, but I think we've been to a number of away games over the years, and that's the only time I've actually thought like something could happen. Fiorentina once in Italy, Spurs fans haven't had too many good trips out there in terms of violence, and that was quite scary at times. But no, in England it's been fine really most of the time. And then in terms of on the pitch, as we said, there's been a number of sort of scary Spurs moments, either that with sort of watching our defence or whatnot. But in terms of individual games being scary, I guess it's any of the big boys really. North London derbies, Chelsea, semi-finals, finals. I think I do get quite nervous in games, not so much before. But yeah, any of those big games, I think it would look back on as being pretty scary.
Yeah, desperate to win. I thought Sanchez was terrible yesterday, and I've kind of defended him by saying, like, look, you know, defenders make mistakes, you know, own goals, whatever. It came off him. Yeah, first half yesterday was one of the worst defense player. I mean, what was he doing? Sorry. what about a player? There we go. There's my player that I used to love and don't anymore. Is probably Sanchez, but what about for you?
Oh, players that I used to love that I don't anymore. I guess there's been loads that Spurs, not so much now, are a selling club, but in sort of my early years of Spurs, anyone good that we had seemed to get poached pretty quickly. So yeah, I used to love Berbatov, Modric, Carrick, Walker, all of these players that went on to bigger and better things at the time. Danny Rose, one that's more recent. I love Danny Rose. When he first broke into that Spurs team under Poch, him on one side, Kyle Walker on the other at White Hart Lane, they were probably the best fullback partnership in Europe at the time. And I'm sort of saying that off the top of my head, but I don't think there would have been anyone that was performing consistent.
And you would have seen both those guys, but in particular, Danny Rose was dreadful. Absolutely dreadful. And all of a sudden, I think it was under Poch, that he all of a sudden overnight became a really good left back. But I remember doing podcasts saying the World Cup's coming up. I think it was whatever the World Cup 2010. And I said, there's 32 teams, so there's 64 left backs. Go and get one of those because our left back is absolutely dreadful. And then all of a sudden, like the next year, he was phenomenal. I don't know. He made. I still, you know, equate it to that comment where he said, "Oh, I'm going to go back up north where there's decent fish and chip shops." And there was a recent photo of him, and it's like, "Oh, you haven't actually done that, have you? You haven't actually decided to have decent fish and chips over being a professional footballer." Oh my God, you have.
I mean, it's difficult. It's hard to. And again, I hope that question. I certainly don't hate Danny Rose now. I'm just looking back at players that I really loved before and don't anymore. I think it's difficult to sort of attack him too much on sort of how openly he spoke about things, because when he was at his peak, it was sort of it was praised that he was this footballer that, similar to another left back, Benoit Sourascoto, that always used to talk about how football wasn't his passion. He does it as a job. And at the time, he thought, yeah, fair play. He's being honest. It's refreshing. So now when he's not playing and he's continuing that approach, it's difficult to sort of, on the flip of that, say, oh, why is he speaking out of tone and whatnot? I think it's probably got him in trouble. It's most likely why he continues to struggle to find the club. But it's sad to see, really, when you look at it. And I think his Spurs spell, whether you agree with it or not, is really going to be tarnished. But when he leaves, Spurs fans as a whole are most likely going to remember him for the last couple of years and being out of favour, which is a shame because, as I said, those first two seasons under...
I'm going to disagree with you slightly there. I'm going to disagree slightly. I think we'll remember him fondly, actually.
I hope so. I do hope so.
I think we will. I think he'll be... because he is outspoken, I think he'll be an excellent pundit. You know, you watch Micah Richards these days, and I just think he's brilliant. And on this top 10 that they're doing on Match of the Day, brilliant. Great character, loads of stories. I think Danny Rose might be a really good storyteller. And that's what I'm hoping anyway. But
certainly,
yeah,
won't hold back.
yeah, I think he'll be good. That's what I'm hoping. What about your favourite ever football match?
Oh, well, I mentioned the Ajax game earlier. As much as I haven't listened to, as you told me to, not because of any reflection of the quality of the podcast, but you told me not to listen to the episode, so I'm assuming most people would answer the same. But the Amsterdam game, I was lucky enough to be in the stadium. It, like, you couldn't, if you was to write the perfect game, being 3-0 down on over the two legs at half time in one of the greatest European cities there is, and to do it in the manner that we did with seconds to go, it was just, even now I've got goosebumps thinking about it. I've been fortunate enough to be at a load of memorable games over the years. The City game at the round before was incredible and probably would have been one of the greatest had we not experienced Amsterdam. Yeah. Which we talk about funny games, that when you're sort of 3 goals in 10 minutes, it was pretty funny. Not so much at the time. The Arsenal 3-2 and we were 2-0 down.
On that City game, I always think if I'd have gone, Son's second goal would have been the one where I'd have gone most mad.
Yeah. My mate, one of my friends nearly had a heart attack. And obviously it's not a nice thing to joke about, but I think it was close. It was just utter shock. Like, we...
1-0 down. Here we go. Same old Spurs. We equalise, luckily, with a deflection. And then a fantastic Son strike to go 2-1 up.
And it was one of those goals that we were obviously behind it. And as soon as he hit it, you just knew it. Like, Spurs fans were celebrating as soon as he hit it. We done an episode on the City game. And you're just thinking at that point, like, all right, Spurs, we're 2-1 up now. We've got two key away goals. Let's just settle into it. And then we know what happens for the next few minutes. Yeah.
Ajax, mate. What was Ajax and Madrid a similar experience in terms of before the game, you know, the hours before the game, the drinking, the fun, the chats, or was there a difference?
Between the two, I think it was different. I think Ajax had a similar feel to most European games, and that sounds strange because it was a Champions League semi-final, but I don't know. I think because of how we'd been, not lucky, I think that's the wrong word. I think we earned it at times, but because we'd been out and in throughout the whole Champions League competition, it felt like we were just there. Like, whatever happens, we've rode out. Again, I don't want to use the word luck, but we did at times. We rode the luck throughout the campaign, and we'd ended up here in the semi-final at Amsterdam. We always try to, no matter where we are and who we're playing and what the score is from the previous tie or whatnot, we always try to enjoy the European trip. So that was the overwhelming feeling. There was thousands of Spurs fans out there, many of which didn't have tickets. And it was just, everyone was in good spirits before. We knew that Ajax at the time had an incredible team. They played us off the park at times, and for most of the time in the first leg. I think people had sort of reason work expectations on how the game would go. Obviously, being 2-0 down after the first 20 minutes, those expectations were certainly different. But I'd say it was different to the final. The final was was monumental. Probably at the time, I hadn't appreciated just how big it was. And you watch Champions League finals each year, and you always imagine what it would be like to have your club there. And when we were there, it was almost too big to comprehend. And only now, 2 years later, I can look back and say, wow, like that was huge. At the time, I don't think it didn't feel like that. Maybe that's just me, just purely because of how big it was and not really knowing how to break that up or comprehend it. But yeah,
I think
because
you go to a lot of away games as well, it may have been because, but it was, for me, it was my only away go. I can't go away because young family and blah, blah, I just go to home games. It's a bit too, I tread that fine line. I was going to say Barcelona as well. Did you go Barcelona when we drew 1-1 to get through?
I didn't. My mates did. That was one game I missed of the group. I can't remember why. Yeah, it was incredible. We watched it, the Fighting Cock to Social in London, and just incredible. They basically effectively hire our pub with loads of Spurs fans.
Did you go to the first ever Social when we drew 2-2 away at City? And we were 2-0 down. We were 2-0 down, and we came back. I think Son scored twice, and then Jesus scored and to make it 3-2, but it was offside. So literally, did you go to that?
I didn't know, but I know that. Yeah, I know the game you're talking about.
Yeah, and Jesus scored. And it's a family-friendly podcast, but all the Spurs fans in this pub were going, singing a song about Jesus. And it was brilliant. But I don't really mention this that often, but just before that game, there was a quiz and I beat T. I don't like to mention it.
Quiz master.
But, you know, I did.
Maybe you need to at him. Well, I know you're trying to, you're lining up Ricky to come on. So when you're chatting to him live on air, maybe if you at T and call him out, then once it's out there, you'll be on, challenge him in a few weeks.
Listen, I've called it out many a time. I went on a quiz recently and I messaged Flav and I said, listen, when you do this round robin quiz thing that they're lining up, better include me because I beat him. I beat the team meister. Come on. Brilliant. All right, mate. Well, let's move on to some quick fire. We're nearly done. We've got some quick fire. By the way, your dad, what do you fancy coming on? Not now, but like in the future.
Yeah, I mean, he joked that he was receiving some fan mail after being on the first one, but he loved it. Like, that's the whole idea of it. Everyone I've spoke to, whatever era, have enjoyed talking about these memories. Like, we're doing one in the 90s next week, and when I asked the two guests that are coming on, they were like, yeah, I'd love to talk about that. And even in that, the little Twitter DMs, like, you're talking about it, and they're like, oh, the 91 Cup final, I was here, I was there. And like, dad and his mate, my friend's dad, Jason, who was on the episode, like, we had a call before recording to basically just let them know how the system would work and whatnot. And we spoke for an hour and 20 minutes just on them two just reminiscing. And like, they really enjoy it. So, yeah, any opportunity they get talk about it, they would absolutely be all over
your
it.
Your dad, definitely. And the other people you do your pod with, just let them know, and we'll get them on, definitely. In lockdown 3, we'll do that. So that's going to be – so we'll all have a summer holiday. And then in what are we thinking, middle of September? That's when we'll do those.
Dread to think.
That's when we'll do those ones. Right. Let's do some quick fire. Who's your favourite ever player?
Ooh, I mean, I'd be lying to myself if I said anybody other than Harry Kane. I think he's probably the best footballer I've seen at Spurs for what he does on a consistent basis. But not only that, if you completely ignore that, we hopefully don't take it for granted, but we're so lucky to have a footballer that knows what it means. And we sing that he's one of our own, and he literally is. Like, he's comes from family of Spurs fans. The story of him sort of being through the U team at Spurs and coming to break into the first team and then just being this consistent world-class striker is really like a once-in-a-lifetime thing to happen. So, yeah, I'd be lying if I said anybody other than Harry Kane.
Favourite ever manager?
Pochettino, without a doubt.
Favourite goalkeeper?
This is a funny one. So my first ever poster that I had on my bedroom wall was Neil Sullivan. And I don't know why, like, goalkeepers...
Good.
He was good, but goalkeepers aren't, when you think of sort of famous football posters, you're thinking of like these world-class legendary players. Not many choose goalkeepers, maybe like the likes of Casillas, Buffon, maybe on some somewhat bedroom walls. But yeah, Neil Sullivan's a strange one. I think I'd even cut it out of a programme. Maybe as, yeah. But I think, yeah, Paul Robinson was an amazing keeper. And again, talking about players that sort of, in inverted commas, got what it meant, Paul Robinson was one of those. And yeah, his spell at Spurs was an enjoyable one.
But you're going for Neil Sullivan, original.
Yeah, I'll go with it. I think clearly he was doing something right in the early days of supporting Spurs.
He was good. What about your favourite midfielder?
I think... Luka Modric was class. He was a little genius when we signed him. Obviously, we played him on the left early doors, and there was some maybe questioning whether or not he would make it in the Prem, which looking back now was a pretty silly thing to say given what he went on to achieve. Modric was just a genius. He was probably one of the greatest. Well, not probably. He definitely was one of the greatest players I've watched. Moussa Dembélé was another one that in his peak was just probably pure talent. Pure talent was arguably the greatest player I've seen at Spurs. Like, he was doing things. Sorry to keep referring back to my podcast, but we done one on a best Spurs five-a-side team, and we spoke about Dembélé. And with players, especially now when we think what Spurs are like in the current times, players get the ball and they get approached by opposition players. You're thinking, oh shit, pass it on or whatever. But when Dembélé got pressed, you'd carry on your conversation with the person sitting next to you because you knew he was going to spin out of it and still have the ball. Like, he was so good. So yeah, I'd go either Luka Modric or probably more likely Moussa Dembélé.
What is your podcast? I don't think we mentioned it. Your current podcast.
Yeah. So the current one's called the Memory Lane podcast. And yeah, as the name suggests, we try to take a trip down memory lane each episode.
Favorite ever defender?
Led the King. Jan Vertonghen comes close, but yeah, in terms of just pure ability, there was a time where if Led the King's name was on the team sheet, you were confident that we were going to win. And from a centre back to say that, it just speaks volumes. We all know sort of his lack of training, his knee injuries, what those meant. But yeah, it was just pure class. And for the time that we were privileged to be able to watch him, he was just a genius, really, a Rolls Royce of a defender.
In the years before the new stadium, where would you go straight to the stadium, or would you go for a drink before?
Our routine really hasn't changed too much for the new stadium. We just probably spend more time in the stadium given what it has to offer. But yeah, we were always driving mostly. Never really, apart from the big games, we would get the train. But yeah, we would always be driving. We'd park up with a little off-license, Pretel Wines, it's called. We used to get maybe a little bag of sweets and a couple of Tisky cans or Holston if we're feeling nostalgic. nostalgic, yeah. And then walk up, yeah, have a... Depending on the game, really, your bog standard sort of 3 p.m. game, we would go in, have a couple of beers in the stadium before, chat to a couple of people that sat around us, then watch the game.
Oh, so you wouldn't go to the Bell and Hare or anything like that?
No, not really. The bigger games like your Chelsea's, West Ham, Arsenal, yeah, we'd always get big groups of us, my mates, my brother's mates, my dad's mates. We'd always assemble either near Liverpool Street. Sometimes we drink because that's where obviously the train goes into, and then make our way over to the stadium. Either the Bill Nickerson or Bill Nickerson really was the one we used to go to quite regularly. And then if we'd won and it was a big game, we'd be back in there after for hours of more drinking and dancing. Ooh. And whatnot.
Bill Nicholson, such a strange, strange pub. Because, I mean, I go there with, I take my boy now, and I took him there, and walk in, we'll go out the back, but as you're walking, I'm holding my hand over his eyes because there's a dancer on the bar.
we got some family in America that come over once and watched the game. We took them there, and they had no idea what was going on. You've got sort of this classic Tottenham pub. You've got a young lady dancing on the bar. You've got house music pumping.
You've got Daniela Westbrook.
It works.
Daniela Westbrook collecting glasses.
Yeah, you've got so much going on.
You know that girl there? She's the equivalent to your, like, your biggest soap opera. She's now collecting glasses.
It's nuts. It worked. Like, I loved the Bill Nick. I can't wait to be back. But it's such a bizarre thing to think everything that happens in there. But yeah, you can't beat it on a nice summer day with the garden, come with your beers with your mates. You can't beat it.
Mad. Favorite of a striker? Is it Harry?
Yeah, I mean, Harry would be the straight answer. But growing up, I used to love Defoe, Keane. Their partnership was great. Even Crouchy and when he was playing alongside Van der Vaart, those two were just so, I say, fun to watch. Crouch was quite frustrating with the fouls he used to give away. And most of the time was just purely because of his height rather than actually doing anything wrong. A weird one, actually, Pavlyuchenko. I don't know why. I always had this weird... I'd even go as far as saying it was almost like an obsession towards Pav. I just, there was something about him, and technically I don't think he was amazing, far from it, but he always used to pop up with big goals in important games. And there was just something about him. I don't know whether it's because he joined, he spoke very little English. He had sort of that Berbatov-esque demeanour, but not to the same degree. That sort of
the goals he scored, definitely.
But he fantastic. Was, yeah, ability-wise, and I think now he's part of Putin's political party in Russia. So I better not say anything too bad towards him. And that's essentially why I just wanted to get him in there, just in case he is listening. don't want to make myself a target.
The Russians, I think they do. I've got Putin on in a couple of weeks. He's agreed to do my Spurs journey. We've got Meghan Markle lined up for her follow-up to Oprah Winfrey. So it's all good. It's all good.
Yeah. You've got the important one out of the way first. And then,
got you. Brilliant. Just one quick question before we finish here. So obviously I heard you on The Fighting Cock and I was like, hang on a minute. There's a couple of podcast interacting there. So, do you know Flav? Do you meet him at games or what? How did that come about?
Yeah, so Flav, obviously the Twitter world is, everyone sort of knows everybody clearly in the Spurs Twitter world. No, Flav, I've spoke to the Fighting Cock boys for a while, on and off. But yeah, having the podcast, obviously there's lots of great Spurs podcasts out there, but those guys have done it so well for a long while. And I felt that their views on football sort of aligned with mine and what I was trying to do, from everything from their podcast to the old 1882 games, where they used to essentially get an area in the stadium, whether that be first team games or youth team games. So I've always sort of looked up to them, so to speak. So when I was, starting the new Memory Lane podcast, I valued their opinion and I wanted to reach out to them to ask for sort of ideas, see what they felt. Flav's a fan that has a number of funny stories, but also I think speaks so eloquently in Spurs and sort of mirrors all the same views that I do. So I immediately felt that he'd be a great guest. So yeah, just reach out to him to ask his opinion. And as you know, they're all great guys and always willing to sort of offer any sort of advice that they can.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. I wondered if you'd ever met them at a game or anything.
At the socials, I had. Not Flav, a few of the others. Ricky, Windy as well. I don't know if anyone knows, but you mentioned the Spursy Pod theme tune, but that is actually Windy, Chris Miller's voice doing
is
that.
Is it? I thought it was you. Yeah,
it's Chris Miller, which I thought was a secret, but it turns out all of those guys know it. But I think because I'm not... I mean, obviously, the podcast in Spurs world isn't competitive as such, but I think because I'm doing something different, I'm not trying to tread on anyone's toes or anything like that. So I think everyone I've spoke to in the podcasting world is willing to help coming on. I guess typically you wouldn't get sort of all the Spurs podcasts going on each other's pods, I guess, but where I'm doing something different, everyone seems to be sort of willing and happy to talk about it, which is great.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, it's been brilliant having you on. Really enjoyed it chatting. You know, all these pods, whenever I talk to anybody about Spurs, it's the passions there. We all know what we love and we've all got different opinions. But at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. It's all about, it's all about winning trophies. Well, thanks very much. But it's also about... still thinking about your favourite club and all your memories, and we've got hundreds, and it's great revisiting them with different aspects of
it brings
of,
all the
how you experience
back,
them.
it brings all the feelings back of when we all fell in love with the club and all those individual, like yesterday, when I think about the Newcastle game and how we're playing at the minute, it angers me. But then you take a moment to chat to you today and some of these memories, and we do it with the podcast, and you think, yeah, like it's crap at the minute, but we're going to have our time. We're going to be back next season. We'll have all these moments for years to come. So I think when you take that view on football, it's refreshing for me. And yeah, it just brings back all those little moments and memories that makes you realise just why we watch it and follow it every week.
Yeah. In 3 weeks' time, you know, in 3 weeks' time, we play a team that hopefully rest a few players, or you know, someone gets sent off for an outrageous two-footed tackle that they didn't mean to do. We go 1-0 up, shut up shop, and we win the cup, and it's all amazing again. You know, is that what we want? Yes, please.
Yeah.
And it's another memory, but we shall see. All right, matey.
Okay, nice. Thank you for having me on, Steve. It's been good fun talking about these
good
things.
Chats. All right, matey. See you soon.
Nice one. Cheers, Steve.
Cheers. Bye.